This is the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. Your hosts, Sam Harris and Nicholas Farik, digest the most interesting, informative, and topical books, giving you their biggest insights. We expose different perspectives and tools to look at the world to make you wiser than yesterday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special episode of the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing a very, very topical book because we are in the midst of a worldwide pandemic, which had severe impact on the stock market. And so the book that Sam and I just read is called The Black Swan by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. And yeah, it was a very interesting read and very applicable to what we see in the markets today. Did you enjoy the book, Sam?
I did really enjoy the book. It's a bit more digestible than the last book we read, I felt. It's a little bit long for mostly not too complicated points. There's some moments where he sort of says some things which you sort of have to stop for a second and then it like makes complete sense. But like when you sort of find, well, if you had to take like a test for cancer and you don't get a positive result, it doesn't mean that you don't have cancer. It means that you have no evidence of cancer, which means you could still have it because you haven't tested everything. And things like that, which it's just two ways of interpreting what sounds like the same words, but are actually really different and important. And so it's worth explaining that quite in depth.
It's a difference between absence of evidence and evidence of absence.
Yes, exactly.
That's the key difference.
Which is kind of the fundamental concept of the book, I guess, as in the Black Swan.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go back and let's talk about the Black Swan. So what is a Black Swan? So a Black Swan is an event that has three key characteristics. So first, it is a big surprise. Two, it has a major impact. And three, and I think that's almost most important, it is usually rationalized in hindsight as if it was expected. And so these are the three main characteristics of a Black Swan. And so the author argues that Black Swans are actually what dominates society. So all the things that happen today, all technologies that grow up, all societies that grow large, all the cities that exist and grow, it all happens in a black swan kind of fashion. So it's very hard to, using the models that we use today to model the world, predict beforehand.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that in case readers, listeners aren't aware that black swans were thought to not exist at all because all we'd ever seen were white swans. And then 100 years, I can't remember. At some point, a black swan was actually found and they went, holy crap, it's a black swan. And they just never thought that would happen. And it somehow became synonymous with this term for really unexpected events.
Yeah. So the origin of the name comes from the fact that up until 1697, mankind believed that all swans were white. But when Dutch explorers finally saw black swans for the first time in Western Australia, the term morphed into describing an event that occurred in spite of seeming impossible. Hmm. And I think it's best illustrated by the story of the turkey.
Yes.
Where imagine being a turkey and having someone who cares for you, who gives you food every day. And so on day one, you get born, you get some food. And the second day, you also get some food. And third day, you get some food again. And after 900 days, you still get fed enough every day. And so you think every day that you live and every day that you get fed, the chance of you dying or something bad happening reduces up until the day that it finally happens and you get slaughtered for conception. And so that is what happens. But we humans use statistical models that for each occurrence of something not happening makes the odds of that not happening exponentially smaller, while that's not always the case. Did that make sense, Sam?
Yeah, definitely. As in, the fatter you get as a turkey, the closer you are to being slaughtered. But on your models, the less likely you are because of you've got more and more evidence that you're in a safe environment kind of thing. And that's sort of how we are with our stock markets and everything. We sort of like, the more used you are to an environment, the less you are able to cope with change and expect it.
So let's talk about how this applies to whatever's happening in the world right now, the corona pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. So what I noticed was that on YouTube, when I'm searching YouTube right now, one of the videos that gets recommended all the time is a video of Bill Gates when he spoke for TED, where he discussed one of the biggest risks to humanity, which are actually pandemics.
Yeah.
And so it's quite funny that right now, in retrospect, people are like, look, but we knew all along and it was so clear and I knew it and I thought it was going to happen. While in reality, no one knew what was going to happen and how it would impact the whole world.
Yeah, yeah. It just wasn't really being taken like that seriously.
Yeah, we weren't prepared enough, although we should have known that was going to happen.
Yeah. As in, technically speaking, we have the evidence of the plague and like the Spanish flu as these massive events on humanity. And now we know that we're so much more connected and these things spread so much faster now in our modern day, but we should have also used to the fact that we have like better healthcare. So we kind of just felt like, oh, it's probably fine. And you don't really think about the fact that actually when you just have no immunity to a thing, it just spreads and kills people. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
One of the points of the book is also that black swans disproportionately impact the people or parties that are least ready for them or least prepared. And I think this is best shown by, to this day, countries like Singapore and Hong Kong have like a minimum amount of cases because a few years back they had SARS. Yeah. And so they already trained their people to, like, they have more experience in what happens when some pandemic breaks out. And so they handled it way better. And so we in Europe were completely unprepared, as is the US. And we're going to feel like it's way worse than these countries do.
Yeah, yeah. It's partly the policymakers and government, and it's also the population. They take it much more seriously because they sort of already know what happens. Mm-hmm. In London, I went from London to a different part of the UK, and there was just such a difference because in London we'd had it earlier from like people coming in. So, and London does just feel like a bit of a different world to the rest of the UK. So I spent the last 2 weeks of like not shaking people's hands and things. And I got to Glasgow and everyone just looked at me like I was bloody ridiculous when I was like trying to give them like an elbow shake. Like, oh, you joker. And then just went to still like, I was like, no, okay, some other people. Yeah. But now I think it's changed a bit. People are just dying everywhere across the UK and stuff. And
yeah.
Like changing the laws, but yeah. It's just, people just don't take it too seriously until it's like bad enough. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which, when you've already had it, it's much easier to take it seriously. So in some ways, this is kind of almost a good thing in that it's not the most terribly lethal disease in that sense. As in, if there was another coronavirus that was 20 times more deadly, then if that comes along in sort of 10 years time, people would remember and be able to take it more seriously. Whereas if that was happening right now, it would have been like more catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's, anyway, you don't want to be saying that this is a good thing right now because probably people don't like you after you say that.
Sure.
Although, it is interesting. I don't know if you've had any friends that are a bit more like utilitarian, and some of them are a bit like, oh, maybe it's good if all the old people die, and you're like, don't say that. And stuff.
I'm usually the one that says these things of my friends, but I haven't had that discussion yet, and also don't really, I mean, I don't think it's a good thing. That's never a good thing. I mean, I still have grandparents who are above 80. Two grandmothers, they're doing fine as we speak, but I'm concerned about their health and well-being. So.
Yeah, a lot of like the climate change activists are sort of like, well, all the travel companies and airlines and oil industries are sort of going down. This is a good thing. There's less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the air pollution in China. It's awful, awful, awful. And the last 2 months is just like a super clean place to be alive in China. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I mean, from the perspective of the climate, it's great. And I think also from the perspective of humankind, it's also a good thing. Because it's not that society is going to be wiped out.
Mm.
I mean, people like humankind is going to go on.
It doesn't really make you stronger in that sense.
We're still like one of the biggest threats to humankind as a species is going to be the climate. And so the fact that we're now allowing, you know, all the impact that we've had to recover a little bit is never a bad thing.
Yeah. And I think also, a massive sudden shift of things, and people kind of hold on to what they have, but when you're suddenly used to things changing, it makes more sense to say, actually, if something's going to change the world and like potentially kill us all, it gives you a bit more acceptability to sort of change your current environment to sort of deal with these problems and do some more radical things, as in, you know, having all these sort of lockdowns and limitations on what you can buy and things because it's for the good of the people, you can kind of accept that. And suddenly if you're like, okay, if we're going to start taxing certain behaviors and things to like save the world, you're much more ready to accept that kind of thing now, which if we had a carbon tax would be very useful kind of thing.
All right. So, and how does this relate to black swans, and how, why are black swans so important then?
So the reason black swans are so important and the things that change the world is in, well, if you imagine just someone that has like a normal job, these are the average of people that you sort of expect. If you went and found another person, you'd have them expect to have like a normal job and they'd be just sort of earning enough money to kind of grow. Whereas black swans are the people like Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, like Steve Jobs. These are the people that change the world, but if you pick a random person, you're not expecting them to be Elon Musk, but it's Elon Musk that's having one of the biggest effects on the planet right now, kind of thing. And these are the people that change the world around you and actually shape what is actually going on in the world, but you never predict someone to be like that. In the same way, like if you're in an ancient society and you're sort of trying to plan how to build things, you don't expect that someone's going to invent the wheel next week, but if someone did, then suddenly everything that you do will completely change and your whole way of living will be very different after the wheel has been invented, but you wouldn't be able to plan for that. And so black swans kind of completely fundamentally change the way everything is. And so it's useful to realize the impact of them, and that's actually, it's only black swans that really drive all the major changes in human society. It's not just sort of normal life going ahead day to day in the average way that it is right now. It's something incredible and different that comes and has a big impact.
So if I understand you correctly, the way we live today is mostly, or almost 99% of it was caused by black swans. Inventions like the internet, inventions like the wheel, and fire, etc. These are all black swan events in themselves. And so how does this translate for you to what's happening today? Like, so how will the future be shaped by the black swan that's happening today?
Yeah. So as in when you're planning like how to live and what to expect, you will be much better off if you're expecting the unexpected and are accounting for that to happen, rather than just sort of going ahead life as normal with all your investments and what you want to plan for your career. If you're ready for some possible major differences and things, if you have, you know, adaptability, resilience as part of your sort of training, you can be adaptable and resilient to these changes in economies and things. Whereas if you sort of have a very fixed mindset on the way you do things, then you won't be able to change to these things. You won't have like an open mind to be able to deal with these things.
And so maybe it's time to talk about recommendations in the book, because so what the author Nassim Taleb does is he explains how, like, what black swans are, and also then makes recommendations of how he carries his career and what he does in his daily life to account for the fact that these black swans exist. Because he argues that most people model the world after a non-black swan reality. So if we look at the stock market, for example, the stock market and how traders trade in the stock market is profoundly based around models, statistical and mathematical models that are based upon the Gaussian curve, the Gauss curve, or the normal distribution, and on existing statistical models, which are based upon that. And what he says is that in reality, reality does not follow the normal distribution, at least not the stock market. So there are some parts in life which do follow the normal distribution, for example, people's height or people's weight. But the returns on the stock market or people's incomes or people's wealth, for example, do not follow the normal distribution.
Yeah.
And so the problem is that today, majority of all people who make decisions in the stock market base themselves on models which are not applicable to the stock market. And so they have no way to correctly assess the risk that they're taking whenever they make any decisions.
Like, when you rely on averages, you get just warped statistics. So as in, if Bill Gates walks into a bar, the average person in the bar is a millionaire. But if you're going to sort of have a part of someone's like wealth of each one, like you're probably going to end up with not very much because most people just earn like a normal amount. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with like Y Combinator. I think two of their companies account for 80% of their total money they've made.
Mm-hmm. No, it's and I think that leads in. That leads in. So venture capital is a good example of what, like how Taleb looks at his career and looks at the way to earn money. And so what he tries to do is he tries to expose himself as much as possible to positive black swans, because there are positive black swans, like for example, the invention of the internet or Facebook or Google. These are positive black swans. And he tries to limit his exposure to negative black swans. So one thing that he doesn't do is owning stocks of big corporations. Because the only thing that can happen with a stock of a very big corporation, let's say BP, for example, British Petrol, is something, there's only one thing that can happen, which is a very bad thing, like just happened, and the stock can go down massively. There's no unlimited upside potential. While if you're invested in a startup, like for example, Revolut, it's one example in MySpace, he tries to maximize his exposure to these positive black swans that have a potential to generate unlimited upside returns. And so one of the takeaways I got from what he said is, he says, if you're doing asset allocation for whatever you own, what he says is you should allocate 85 to 90% of what you have to something really, really, really low on risk. And so there he would go to treasury bills. And the other 10 to 15%, he would invest in small portions of maximum exposure to potential positive black swans. Yeah. And so there he would do into VC investments, so small startups that have the potential to become the next Google. Because if you take 1% of your net worth and you invest it in a startup that becomes the next Google, then you're set for life. So that's the way he approaches these things.
Yeah, it's super good question. There's also an interesting article by the Y Combinator founder called Black Swan Farming, which is about their strategy of basically why like these business accelerators exist, which is just literally Black Swan Farming, where they just only invest in small companies that have the potential to be the next Google, which mm-hmm. is how they ended up investing in Airbnb and companies like that and Stripe, which then become like those massive $1 billion companies. But they do this every year. They invest in like 20 startups, most of which don't do amazingly. Like many fail, many perhaps make like a small amount of money, and it's just the few that become like massive multi-billion-dollar companies. The thing mm-hmm. but you need to have like the odds across a lot of things to get that, and so just expose themselves to that kind of risk. But obviously it's an accelerator, so don't do all of your money like that. Follow that's the end advice of 80% in something safe.
Exactly. No, it's true. And actually, this reading the book made me realize that the way I position my own company, so I'm myself regularly going to investors and seeking capital. Mm. And so what I've realized is that we should position ourselves more
extreme.
We've actually made a big change. I've already discussed this, but right now what we're doing is we're planting trees. So I'm in a payment company. We have a payment app. And we're saying is for every 10 trees that you plant, no, I'm sorry, for every 10 payments that you make, we plant a tree. And this is drastically different than we did before, because we didn't used to do that. But this gives us the potential of going viral. I'm not saying it will, but at least we expose ourselves to the potential viral effect where people will say, holy crap, with only 10 payments, I can help plant a tree. I care about the environment, and I'm going to make sure that my whole family and all my friends also use this app to pay. And so that is, I think, it's good that we position ourselves in a different way, that we expose ourselves to a potentially positive black swan. Because there's a universe in which we become the main payment app
The
next 5 years. And the way that we used to run things, the chance for that would have been way lower. Although it's already very low, but it would have been almost non-existent.
Yeah. As in, most investors like, either get their money from like a few huge returns and the rest don't do too much. So you want to sort of say that you have potential to be the huge thing. And if you're just aiming for sort of average, it's average doesn't actually exist where you think it does. So you're probably going to be below what the average is, because you're not like the billionaire like Bill Gates. So you need to sort of state that you could be huge. And people underestimate their ability to get huge. So people like Bill Gates and like any sort of music artist that's famous, like they never thought they could be as successful as they are, but yet they are. And so you mm-hmm. have this potential to be hugely successful, like beyond your kind of wildest dreams. And otherwise, like, you don't know many sort of semi-famous musicians. You're either just like an average worker that sort of just gets paid to go and do sort of not very much at all, mm-hmm. or you're like massively rich. But if you're aiming to be kind of quite successful, you're not actually going to be like quite successful. You're just it's going to be massive or nothing. So you just need to always think that you're going massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think translating what he says to today would have meant if we were very consistent and we had read this book, let's say 3 months ago, if we were Nassim Taleb, what we would have done is we would have bought put options. Mm. Because that's usually what he does. He doesn't invest in normal stocks, but he invests small amounts of money in order to take advantage of potential black swans, usually negative black swans. And so I think the way that he does that is he buys put options, where it's a contract where he buys the right to sell a stock at a certain amount of money in the future, at some time in the future. So if I had bought, let's say, a put option for the S&P 500 at the level that it used to be a month ago, and I would have bought that put option for today, to be executed today, I would have made massive amounts of money. And that's the way that he actually earns money. So instead of investing in the stock market over long periods of times and gaining a bit of money, but then potentially losing it all because of one black swan, he actually loses a bit of money the whole time and then wins a lot of money whenever yeah. black swans happens. And that's the way he looks at the world and at his money making as well.
Yeah, so does the inverse of normal people kind of just try to make money while things are good and then like sort of hope they have enough whilst things go mentally wrong. And he's like, well, things go mentally wrong, you can make like five times more money than you ever could during like the times when things are good.
And things will go mentally wrong. It's just a matter of when, right?
Yeah.
It's not a matter of if. So it's going to happen. And so what he does, and the thing is, that what I find annoying is I read these books. I understand his message. And I think I fully agree with his message. But then I'm not able to really act upon it.
Yeah. I think once you get older, maybe you can sort of take that strategy. But when you're young, you don't have the longer term capacity to sort of put your investments. If you're 20 and in the next 10 years a black swan event's going to happen, you can't not make money for the next 10 years. You know, you need to kind of be making money up until that point. You can't sort of put all your money just into like going into things that maybe haven't a huge upside potential but probably don't make mm-hmm. any money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you need to have like capital to be able to start to go 10 years without making any money kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I was lucky enough to not be fully invested into the stock market. And so now is a good time for me because I'm able to buy stuff for cheap, which is still not following the black swan principle, but it's still, I think I'm in this case, I'm following Warren Buffett.
Yeah, yeah. Capitalizing on black swan events, not quite in the same way as he does it, but it's still...
Exactly. Instead advice. Of proactively making money on the black swan event, you're actually reactively making money by not being exposed to the negative black swan and being able to pick up some cheap stuff. Yeah.
Just interesting at the moment, like I think we were talking before, Anderson, things are going to be fundamentally different after this. So investing in things just returning to exactly normal is not quite the optimal strategy. So, you know, airlines... they were huge before, just invest in airlines. It's like, well, actually, they might not be as valuable as they were. Well, the ones that exist might not even exist kind of thing. Because, as in, I know some people that are quite big at Heathrow and they've been building like a third runway. Well, they've been planning this for a long time, but they've kind of cancelled those plans because, one, they can't do that right now, but they're kind of expecting that they're just going to have a much lower amount of people flying after this for quite a long while. Because essentially a lot of their travel, well, a lot of their money comes from business travelers and no one's changed quite how they do business for the last 10 years, even with like the rise of Zoom and all these things and online meetings. there's still a lot of people going around. But certainly when people just can't move or anything for 4 months, everyone has suddenly gone to being a remote company where no one travels. And after this, they're not expecting to have things go back to what they were after people have suddenly had this forcing function to teach them how to do remote meetings and things. Like, if this is now a bit more business as normal for the next 4 months, it's not going to go back to the way business used to be. Like, there will be some systemic changes in the way businesses operate, which means that less people will be traveling for business. And then also some more airlines may go down and less slots available and all these things. So just less travel happening. Mm-hmm. It won't just be able to bounce back straight away. Because like smaller companies in some ways can survive and just go back to normal straight away. Whereas these big companies, you know, they've got to lay off thousands of workers just to be able to survive this. They can't just suddenly recruit people all straight away. And you just can't suddenly turn on British Airways into having like a million flights when half their staff don't exist and these things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's going to be right. A fundamental difference.
I think we're up for a major economic recession, because before the whole Corona story, a lot of companies were over leveraged and taking advantage mm-hmm. of the very low interest payments and the interest rates. And so now the fact that they're not making money anymore is going to be very problematic for a lot of companies. So I think after this is over, we're going to see a major shakeup where a lot of smaller companies are going to be out of business and bankrupt.
For me, it's
only going to get worse before it gets better. Yeah, it's been a very weird week for me now, because in the past week I've spoken to 5 different people face to face, max, of which 99% with my girlfriend. So
yeah. Yeah, it's definitely going to get a bit like tired of just being around the same people the whole time. Like, oh God, I need to go out and do things. So I do imagine by the summer, people will be pretty excited to go and do other stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's hope it gets better by then. But hard to predict. But yes. Let's get back to the book. Yeah. A bit, because it's been difficult that we're talking about this Black Swan event, but not necessarily in the framework that the book presents. Let's discuss the two concepts of Mediocristan and Extremistan, because these are concepts that keep on coming back and is super interesting. And so Taleb looks at the world in this kind of framework, and he divides the world into two groups. And one group of events, or how you call it, of things fall under in the world of mediocrity or Mediocristan, and the other fall into the world of Extremistan. And so I think we shortly touched upon this, but for example, people's height and weight falls into the category of Mediocristan. And so the way to look at it is, if you have 1,000 people and you take their average weight, for example, and if you then take the heaviest person alive, which weighs, let's say, 500 kilos, I don't know, it's probably a bit less, but let's say he or she weighs 500 kilos. If you add them to that group of 1,000 people, it will not dramatically impact the average. Mm. It will barely impact the average. However, if you take a group of 1,000 people and you take their average net worth, and if you then add the richest person alive, their average net worth, as you said, you know, Bill Gates walks into a bar, the average person there in there is a millionaire, is going to be the same in this case. And so that's the best way for me to think about what kind of situations belong to Mediocristan and what kind of situations belong to Extremistan.
Well, in the same way with like health or money, is in on a given day, you can't get fat or get thin. It's like it's a long, slow process. Mm-hmm. On a given day, you can lose all your money or become a billionaire, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a billionaire, but you can become a millionaire in a day.
Yeah, and it's probably more likely to lose all your money, you know, usually in these kinds of things. Negative black swans happen very fast, and usually positive black swans happen over time. For example, the internet or companies like Google, Facebook, etc.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's an interesting concept. Something you want to add on that?
I think in the same way as in, I guess, thinking about your job, as in, if you are someone that trades your time for money, like, or a baker, you need to make more bread to get more money. So how many moments can you spend making a bread roll, kind of thing? It's the amount of bread rolls that you can make in a day that affects what you earn. Whereas if you're like a writer like J.K. Rowling, she writes Harry Potter once. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have to write another book for another person to buy a book. You have to make another bread roll for another person to buy a bread roll, kind of thing. So
yeah, it's a concept of scalable and non-scalable jobs, right?
Exactly.
And I found it kind of ironic that the author actually suggests, like, if he would make a suggestion to someone, if someone comes to him for career advice, he would suggest them to pursue a non-scalable career. So a job in the field of mediocristan, because he says that the odds of, there's a survivorship bias when it comes to, for example, entrepreneurs. We only hear about the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezoses and the Bill Gates, people that start in their garage and get filthy rich. But we never hear, or we don't hear enough about all the people that tried and failed. And the way he describes it is that there's more actors or writers being hungry than there are hungry accountants or dentists. That's what I personally try and take away from this is that I used to work as a freelancer, as a developer, and now I moved into the world of entrepreneurship. And so I think I see myself being an entrepreneur and just starting business after business until one succeeds, you know?
Yeah,
definitely. One, it's way more fun. And two, I expose myself to the potential upside benefits of a positive black swan.
Yeah, if you can find a way to sort of, as in like the 80%, 85% to sort of 15% of your investment, as in if you, it sounds like you should be spending 85% of your time being a contractor and just 10% on like a startup. But I think if you're able to explain why your startup might be great, you can always raise money and then just pay yourself the same kind of wage that you would be earning normally anyway, but just doing things that have unlimited upside potential. And at one point, one of them will go really well, hypothetically, just being able to raise capital and stuff.
I mean, it's a bit of a gamble, but what most people do, like if you go work for a big company, you're probably going to earn a higher salary than you do if you start your own company. That makes sense. And so what in the end, I think happens is that people who work in a big company, they start saving up the extra money, right? So they have, let's say they need 1,500 euros to survive and they earn 2.5K. So they have 1,000 that they can put into their savings. And if you're an entrepreneur, you will never be able to pay yourself 2.5K. So let's say that you pay yourself 1.5, just enough to survive, and there's no way for you to save. And then what you're actually doing is you're saving is the potential, the upside potential of your venture. I think that's the way I'm looking at it. And that's how I try and live my life, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of relates to stuff we were talking about before the episode of the changes back to more coronavirus-y stuff, but Black Swan related, as in a fundamental shift in what is valuable potentially, as in when the world has massive black swan events, because if climate change goes nuts and we need to have like the government enforcing complete changes in the way we live our lives, and perhaps if you spent all this time earning money to have like different houses and all these things, but there's countries that are uninhabitable and people come in and just need to be given houses, maybe the government just takes land off people and just says, hey, humans, we haven't got enough space. If there's space here, it becomes this other person's, and it doesn't really matter that it's got your name on it currently, it won't have your name on it anymore, kind of thing. And certainly, I mean, I was in Israel where the Jewish nation came and was just given half of Israel from the people that already lived there, and people were just thrown out of their houses and had nowhere to live. And there's 60 years later, there's still people living in refugees camps in Palestine because their land's just been taken off them, and Israeli nation can still come and just destroy houses at any given moment. And you kind of realize that what you think is normal can just be taken away from you. It's just just because your name's written somewhere doesn't mean you actually own a house. Being more ready for these things, like I said, like having more of a resilient mindset and ability to change is important in the world of black swans.
Exactly. And I think what you're saying right now is probably the main message from the book. And it is that open your mind to the worst kind of scenarios and the most extreme kinds of scenarios. You can't know what's going to happen, but you can try and figure out how the worst thing that could happen will impact you. And the one of the messages in the book is to understand that and make sure that you're ready when the worst thing that could happen happens.
Yeah. And I think it goes quite a lot into how bad we are at predicting things. And if you are prepared for specific events, you're less prepared than someone that's just slightly prepared for everything. So if you expect something very specific to happen, so let's say you know that you've had like hurricanes before and you just invest all of your emergency resources into defending against hurricanes, then you're not prepared for other events such as a pandemic. Whereas if you just know that crap happens and you just invest more in emergency services and teaching your nation to sort of follow your instructions and change things, you're much more prepared for different possibilities that you can't really predict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's true.
Being more of a not specific skilled, but like a multi-purpose-y thing, and just expecting that you're not going to be able to know what to expect. Yeah. A lot of experts. I don't know where I got in that chain.
We should all start watching Bear Grylls videos fast.
Definitely.
Just to be able to survive in the wild. All right. One concept I would also like to touch upon is the ludic fallacy. And so the ludic fallacy is the tendency of humans to use things they know to explain events. And so I think the best illustration of this is a casino. And so the author describes all the measures that a casino takes to limit their potential losses. And as you might expect, they install cameras everywhere and they limit all the risk that they run, the operational risk that they run by while running a casino. So they make sure that there's no cheaters, no one's counting cards, and people cannot make very, very big bets because that could potentially be a risk to them. And so they've invested millions and millions and millions of dollars into reducing their operational risk. And in the end, looking back, the biggest losses that the casino made, which totaled in the hundreds of millions, were one of their artists got attacked by his or her animals. So they had like an animal, like a show with animals.
Yeah, it's one with a tiger.
So that was one. Then the other one was one of their employees who had to send some tax reports, actually just never sent the tax reports. And so they got like a huge fine for that. And so in the end, the ludic fallacy is that the casino assesses the risks using what they know, which is casino games, you know, roulette, blackjack, and slot machines. But they don't take into account any other types of risk. And so if they had gotten any kind of insurance for example, an employee that's not doing their job, they would be way better off. And that's a ludic fallacy. It's like we try to use models we know to explain the stuff we don't know. And that's a big, very big mistake. Some other points you'd like to touch on?
Yeah, the 80-20 rule. I quite liked his assessment of that, as in it could actually be the 51 rule. They're not the same ratios at all. But as in, it's just the most gains come from like a smaller part of the population, like the 20% results in the 80% of gains kind of thing. But then within that 20%, it's the same rule again. So that's why you have like from the one, you get 50% of your gains. Well, from the 1%, you get like 50% of gains kind of thing over the world. So the 28 rule is just like, it's a random part on the curve of the way these two things interlap that just happen to sound good that gets stated, but it's actually not fully accurate. Or I think,
I mean, like, if you try to use that principle for wealth, for example, you can say that the top 0.00001% owns like 50% of all wealth. Something great, crazy like that.
Yeah, definitely. I think like non-fiction authors, it's like 5 books a year account for like 90% of sales or something. Silly.
Absolutely. It's really crazy how, and I mean, that's the common point in the book, is that people, humans, we try to model the world according to something we can understand. And so the normal distribution and the 80-20 rule, we understand. And then that's why we then try and apply it to everything in the world, while he suggests that we should work the other way around. So instead of coming up with a model and then applying it to the world, we should look at the world, have as much experience as possible, have as much data as possible, and then use that to create a model and use that to assess the future and risks and probabilities.
Yeah.
All right. That rounds up the episode. We discussed Black Swan by Nassim Taleb and the current pandemic caused by the coronavirus. Black Swan is the second book in Nassim Taleb's series on randomness and life, And please join us next week when we discuss the next book in this series, which is called The Bed of Procrustes. See you then.
Ciao.